What plans do you have in store? I ask, remaining in the doorway. I'll have to be quick. Who will you make me become next? Both of them know what I'm asking, but neither can answer. Not with Norton officers close by, few as they may be. They must maintain the illusion of this alliance until the last second. If you're going to run, so will I murmur. The King of the Rift clenches a fist, and the metal throughout the room responds in kind. A few screens crack, their casings twisted by his rage.
We're not going anywhere, Evangeline, he lies.
Mother tries another tactic, closing the distance between us. Her dark, angled eyes go wide and pleading, imitating a puppy or a cub. She puts a hand to my face, ever the image of the doting mother.
We need you, she whispers. Our family needs you, your brother.
I step out of her grasp, toward the hallway again, luring them both with me. Two rights, out the front, into the square. Let me go. Father's shoulders past my mother, almost knocking her out of the way so he can stand over me. The chromium armor gleams harshly in the fluorescent light. He knows what I'm saying, what I'm really asking for.
I will not, he hisses. You are mine, Evangeline, my own daughter. You belong with us, you have a duty to us.
Another step backward. At the door, the wolves rise to their feet.
I don't.
Like a shadow, like a giant, Father moves with me, matching my steps.
What are you if not a Samos? He snarls. Nothing.
I knew this would be his answer, and the last thread, already thin and fraying, snaps apart. In spite of myself, tears bite at the corners of my eyes. If they fall, I don't know. I feel nothing but the burn of my own anger.
You don't need me anymore. Not for power, not for greed.
I spit back in his face. And you still won't let me go free. He blinks, and for a brief second the rage in him dissipates. The trick almost works. He's my father, and I can't help but love him, even though he treats me this way. Even though he wants to use that love to keep me locked up, a prisoner to my own blood. I was raised to value family above all else, loyalty to your own. And that's who Elaine is, my family, my own.
I'm done asking for your permission, I whisper, clenching a fist.
The lights overhead rip free, smashing down, a crashing blow that takes even my father off guard. A rush of silver blood gushes from cuts on his head as he stumbles, dazed, but not dead. Not even incapacitated. I can't find the stomach for that. I've never run so fast, never sprinted like this in all my life, not even in battle, because I've never been so afraid. The wolves are faster than me. They snarl at my heels, trying to trip me. I strike at them with the metal on my arms, drawing armor into knives. One howls, whimpering when I cut a ruby-red wound across its belly. The other is stronger, bigger, leaping to knock me over. I try to dodge and end up falling flat on my back, with a wolf lunging for my throat. It lands hard, almost 200 pounds of muscle crashing into my chest. I gasp, feeling the air rush from my lungs. Teeth clamp around my neck, but they don't bite down. The points dig in, enough to bruise, enough to pin me in place. Overhead, all around, the lights quiver in their metal holdings, and hinges shutter on doors. I can't move, can barely breathe. I made it 10 whole yards.
Don't lift a finger, my mother crows, stepping into my very limited line of vision.
Above me, the wolf trembles, yellow eyes boring into mine. My father shudders at her side, a storm cloud of rage. He keeps one hand to his head, stemming the flow of blood. His eyes are worse than the wolf's.
You stupid girl, he breathes. After all we've done for you, all we made you.
But for one flaw,
my mother replies. She tisks, clucking her tongue over me, like I'm one of her prize animals, bred for her personal use.
I suppose that's not incorrect.
One deep, unnatural flaw.
I tried to gasp against the wolf's grip, if only to choke back a sob. My stomach coils and churns. Let me go, I want to beg. But he never will. He doesn't know how. And perhaps that's the fault of his own father, and his father before. I don't know why, but I think of Mayor Barrow, of her parents, holding her close, saying goodbye as we left Montfort. They are nothing, insignificant people, of no great beauty, intellect, or power. I envy them so deeply it makes me sick.
Please, I manage to force out.
The wolf holds firm. Father takes a step closer, his fingers painted in liquid silver. With a flick of his hand, he sprays me with his blood. With what I did.
I'll drag you back to the rift myself.
I don't doubt it. I stare up at him, struggling to breathe, fingers scrabbling over the floor. Even my own armor betrays me, melting off my body under his command, leaving me bare and without weapons, vulnerable, a prisoner still and always. Then my father flies away from me, crashing backward, his face pulled into unfamiliar surprise. He's being dragged by the chromium painted up and down his body. He slams into the nearest wall, head cracking backward. My mother screams as he slumps forward, eyes rolling in his skull. The wolf above me meets a different fate. A blade cuts through its neck, and the severed head flies, landing with a sick squelch a few feet away. A hot spray of fresh scarlet blood coats my face. I don't flinch. A familiar, cool hand closes around my wrist, giving me a tug.
You trained us too well,
Ptolemus says, helping me to my feet. We run together, and this time, I look back. Mother bends over father, her hands running over him. He tries to rise, but the blow makes him stagger. He's still alive.
Goodbye, Evangeline,
another man says. Julian Jacobs steps out from an adjoining corridor, and Annabelle is with him, her fingers drumming together. She doesn't spare a glance for me as she approaches, hands raised. Such lethal power in so small a woman.
Run away, Laurentia.
I fight the urge to cover my ears, even though Julian's melodic voice is not directed at me. Still, the singer's power shudders on the air, palpable as a sugary taste.
Forget your children.
Her footsteps are quick and scurrying, like one of her spying rats.
Laurentia,
my father gurgles, barely able to speak in his dazed state. But he can certainly scream. I leave him to Annabelle and Julian, to whatever fate they have in store for the King of the Rift. Outside, the fog has truly fallen, coating the square in a gray haze too thick to be born of nature. Wren stands silhouetted, waiting for us, her trim form a sharp outline against the other shadows slouching into formation. Cal's forces, maybe even an entire legion, judging by the many shapes. At the sight of us, Wren waves a hand.
This way, she calls before turning to the fog and the soldiers.
Something weighs at the edge of my perception, heavy enough to register even from a great distance. The Lakelander ships. They have to be. Overhead, unseen, jets scream back and forth. Somewhere missiles whine and bloom, spouting bursts of flame where the armada must be. I feel trapped by the fog, blinded. All I can do is focus on Wren and Ptolemus, staying close enough to their silhouettes as we barrel through the legions marching into place. A few soldiers stare as we pass, but none try to stop us. And soon, war command fades into the distance, swallowed by the fog. We angle across the square, making for the treasury. A strange, familiar feeling comes over me as I remember Maven's wedding. The square was a battleground then as well, and he fled for his train, his precious escape. I never liked the contraption, but I push aside any discomfort. It's the fastest way out, the safest. We'll be far beyond the city before the battle is even finished. And then, I don't have the time or energy to follow that thought. Rain follows the fog, slamming down with a sudden hiss. I'm soaked in seconds, and the deluge turns the square slick, forcing us to slow our pace or risk broken ankles. Down in the river, a boom like a drum sounds, rhythmic and shuddering. It shakes the ground beneath my feet. The ships are firing on the city. There are heavy rounds peppering both east and west, Archeon. I reach for Ptolemus, my fingers sliding over his wet armor as I try to find some grip on him. The rest of me braces for the inevitable impact as the Lakelander fire reaches this part of the city. My instincts aren't wrong. The first missile howls over the square gates, barely visible as it arcs in and out of the fog cover. I don't see where it lands, but judging by the concussive blast behind us, I'd guess Whitefire just suffered a direct hit. The force knocks a few soldiers off their feet and sends us scrambling. Ptolemus and I ground ourselves in our armor, and Holly catches Ren before she falls, holding her tightly. "Keep moving!" I shout over the shriek of another round, this one exploding somewhere near War Command. Someone else is shouting too, barking barely audible orders over the din. A streak of flame accompanies his voice, whirling through the fog near the head of the gathered legion. Whatever stirring speech Cal cooked up will be of little use now. It's too loud, too wet, and his soldiers are too distracted by the armada currently choking the river. Still, they begin to march, lurching forward to follow whatever his orders might be. Probably to line the cliffs, concentrate their attack on the river below. We're suddenly caught in their motion. The legion surges like a tide, carrying us with them. I tried to shove against the uniformed bodies, searching the silver faces for Ptolemus and Ren. Still close, but the distance between us is steadily growing. I feel for the copper in my brother's belt, holding on to the sensation of the metal. "Move!" I snarl, trying to tear my way through the crowd, using my armor to propel me, using Ptolemus's as a beacon. "Move!" The next blow is closer, dead on target, dropping out of the sky like a hammer. A shell, not a missile. Smaller, unguided, but still deadly. In unison, separated though we are, Ptolemus and I raise our hands, throwing out our ability with a mighty burst of energy. I grab onto the steel casing, gritting my teeth against the strain of stopping a fast-moving projectile. But we manage, and with equal grunts, fling the shell back into the fog, spiraling off to hopefully explode somewhere in the Lakelander fleet. A few Telkies among Cal's legion do the same, banding together to throw back shells and missiles. But there are too many rounds rocketing out of the fog, almost on top of us before we even know it. The air fleet races among the clouds, still weaving through the sky, peppering the armada as best they can with all they can. They aren't the only jets up there. The Lakelanders have aerial battalions of their own, as does Piedmont in fewer numbers. Between the thunder of the ships and the scream of the jets, I can barely hear myself think. And the Norton guns only add to the chaotic din. The turrets up ahead spit sparks and hot iron, flashing with gunfire. They're usually disguised as part of the walls around the square, or supports to the bridge. But not now. A few Telkies stand at the turrets, using their abilities to fling explosives with deadly aim. This city was built to survive, and that's what it's trying to do. A wind picks up, probably born of our own windweavers. House Laris is still allied to Cal, and they use their ability to its full extent. A howling gale streaks over the square, blowing from somewhere behind us. It knocks some of the shells and missiles off course, and a few land harmlessly in the river while others spiral off into the fog. I squint against the slapping wind, keeping Ptolemus and Ren in sight. But the hurricane force makes the soldiers tighten their ranks, squashing us in with them. Gritting my teeth, I painstakingly shove my way through, slipping under arms, pressing past guns and torsos. Every step is an ordeal, made more difficult by the lashing wind, the rain, the press of the legion. The crowd tosses like the river below, now white-capped with rising waves. My hands close on Tali's wrist, his armor cold against my fingers. He heaves, pulling me to him over the last yard, until I'm tucked safely into his side. My brother holds Ren in the same manner, his arms braced across both our shoulders. What now? We have to get to the edge of the crowd, but the walls and buildings of the square keep the legion hemmed in, funneling all of us toward the bridge. Even from a distance, I can see Cal elevated above the rest, his red armor like blood against the howling storm. He stands to the side of the open gates, perched on a stone turret. Like some idiotic target. A good sniper could pick him off from 1,000 yards if they cared to try. But he risks it for the morale of his troops, shouting encouragement as they charge onto the bridge. More shells hurtle toward him, but he flicks a hand, exploding the rounds in midair before they can do any harm. On the bridge itself, silver soldiers disappear into the fog. I can guess their destination. Even now, the rhythmic, haunting drum of the Armada's guns breaks its pattern. I try not to picture Norton's soldiers fighting on the ship decks, facing the full might of Queen Senra's and Prince Bracken's forces.
If we can get you two onto the ships, Cal's voice echoes in my head. I grit my teeth against the curl of shame licking through me.
I'm not wading into this battle, not on another river, not with them down there. This is our chance, and we have to take it. Keep pushing, I shout, hoping Tali can hear me over the din. The treasury is behind us now, the distance growing with every passing step. It's suffocating, being shoved like this, prodded forward against my will. I don't have much armor left. My father stripped most of it away. But what little I have reforms along my arm, flattening into a round shield. Ptolemus mirrors my action, creating a smooth disc over his arm. We use them like battering rams, pushing against the human tide with our abilities and our own strength. It works slowly but steadily, creating enough space for us to move. Until red armor blocks our path, a fireball hovering over one hand. Cal stares between us, and I expect accusation. His flame gutters against the rain, refusing to surrender. His soldiers form a protective cocoon around him. Rainwater drips down his face, steaming on his exposed skin.
How many are you taking with you?
He says, barely audible. I blink water out of my eyes and gesture blankly at Ren and Ptolemus.
Your father, Evangeline, how many will he manage to flee with?
Cal takes a long step forward, never breaking eye contact.
I need to know who I still have left.
Something releases in my chest. I shake my head, slow at first, then faster and faster. I wouldn't know, I murmur. Cal's expression doesn't change, but for a moment I think the flame in his hand burns a bit brighter. Again, his gaze bounds between my brother and me, weighing us both. I let it wash over me like the rain and the fog and the rising smoke. Tiberius Calore is not my future anymore. Without another word, he stands aside, and his soldiers move with him, clearing a path over the slick tiles of the square. As I move past him, I feel a ghost of warmth bleeding from his hand as it hovers near my arm. I think he almost hugs me. Cal has always been an odd sort, different from other silvers, strange and soft in his inclinations, while the rest of us were raised to razors and hard edges. Instead of embracing him, I grab his arm, just for a moment. Pull him close enough for one last whisper. One last barb from Evangeline Samos before she disappears. Without her crown, without her house, without her colors. To become a new person entirely. If it isn't too late for me, it isn't too late for you. When we sit down on the train, its lights flickering, an engine lumbering to life, only then do I dimly wonder where the tracks end. It will be a long walk to Montfort.
33. Mare. I'm still not used to the purple hair. It isn't as garish as Ella's, at least. I only let Gisa dye the gray ends, leaving the roots untouched. I twist a spare lock around my finger, staring at the odd color as I walk. Strange as it looks, it gives me a small burst of pride. I'm an electricon, and I'm not alone. After the first attack on Archeon, Maven and his loyal advisors took up a campaign of collapsing or flooding the immense tunnel system beneath the city. They concentrated heavily on the southern edges, where the tunnels were more numerous, all of them leading to the ruins of Naersea at the mouth of the Capital River. Davidson originally suggested striking out from the abandoned city, but Farley and I knew better. Maven destroyed that too, rooting out the Scarlet Guard's stronghold while obliterating whatever remained. He was inspired by the guard as well, constructing tunnels of his own in addition to an escape train. I can't be certain, not this deep, or after this long underground, but I think we'll link up with the train line eventually. My inner compass spins, searching for true north in vain. We have to rely on guard intelligence, what they know of the tunnels, and we have to rely on Maven. Stupid as it is, he is our best hope for getting as far into the city as we can. The combined force of Montfort and the Scarlet Guard is too big to simply strike from the air, or the river, or the ground. We have to do all three. Of course, I'm stuck scrabbling in the darkness, walking for hours beneath several tons of rock and soil. Maven cuts a harsh silhouette, backlit by our lanterns. He's still wearing the simple uniform the Montfortans gave him when they locked him up. Washed out gray pants and shirt, the fabric too thin, and the cut too big on his frame. It makes him look younger than he is, more gaunt and drawn than ever before. I hang back, using Farley as a human shield between us. His own guards are close at hand as well, an even mix of reds and new bloods. None of them falter, hands resting on their holstered guns. Titan walks close by, never breaking his concentration on Maven. They're prepared for the first sign of trouble. So am I. My body buzzes, a live wire, not from my own electricity but from sheer nerves. I felt it for hours, since Maven brought us down here, leading us through a service hatch a few miles north of the city limits. Our army lumbers along with us, thousands winding through the darkness, marching at an even steady pace that echoes off the tunnel walls. It sounds like a heartbeat, rhythmic and pulsing, vibrating in my ribcage. On my right, Killorn shuffles along, his steps a bit stilted to keep pace with mine. He notices me staring and pulls a tight smile. I try to return the gesture. He almost died in Newtown. I remember the feel of his blood spraying across my lips. The memory fills me with a numb fear. My old friend reads my face, even in the dim light. He nudges my arm. You have to admit, I have a talent for survival. Let's hope it holds, I mutter back. I'm just as concerned for Farley, in spite of all her skills and wiles. Not that I'd ever say it out loud. Farley has command of half the ground forces, all the Scarlet Guard soldiers, as well as the Red Norton defectors collected over the months of rebellion. Davidson leads the other half, though he is content to walk in line with the rest of us, letting her take precedence. Up ahead, the tunnel splits. One side narrows but angles sharply upward, the path scrambling over a few ancient steps, punctuated by gentle slopes of packed dirt. The other carries on like this one, wide and flat, with the slightest incline. Maven slows before the fork, resting both hands on his hips. He seems amused by the guards flanking him, all six of them moving in lockstep. "Which way?" Farley barks. Maven glances over at her, wearing a familiar smirk. The shadows cut deep along his cheekbones and make his blue eyes stand out, vivid in their icy coldness. He doesn't answer. She doesn't hesitate, striking him across the jaw. Silver blood spatters the tunnel floor, winking in the lantern light. At my side, I clench a fist. I would let Farley grind Maven into a pulp under any other circumstances, but we need him right now. "Farley," I hiss, wishing I could call back the word as soon as I speak. She frowns at me, even as Maven grins, showing silvered teeth. "Up," he says simply, pointing to the steeper way. I'm not the only one to curse under their breath. The narrower path isn't difficult, but it does slow us down. Maven seems to delight in the prospect, looking back with a haunting sneer every few minutes or so. We have to walk 3 abreast instead of 12 as before, making for a cramped descent. The tunnel quickly grows hot with the presence of so many bodies, all of them nervous and agitated. A bead of sweat rolls down my neck. I would prefer to storm the capital at full strength, but I guess this will have to do. Some of the steps are uneven and too high, forcing me to scramble. Killorn watches me go, almost laughing. I can call forth a lightning storm, but tall steps are apparently beyond me. The climb doesn't take longer than a half hour, but it feels like days spent in the dim light, scuffling in relative silence. Even Killorn keeps his mouth shut. The circumstances settle over the long train of soldiers like a cloud, sobering us all. What will we find when we finally reach the surface? I try not to look at Maven, but find myself focusing on the outline of his body. It's instinctual. I don't trust him in any capacity. I expect him to dart into a crevice, disappear, and escape. But he keeps an even pace, never faltering in his steps. The path flattens again, joining a wider tunnel with rounded walls and stone supports. The air is colder, sending a chill over my fevered skin. "I think you know where we are," Maven says, his voice echoing down to me. With one hand, he gestures to the center of the tunnel floor. A pair of new tracks gleams, reflecting our lanterns. We've reached the escape train. I swallow hard, feeling a swell of fear rise in my throat. Not long now. Everyone else knows it, too, judging by the thrum of activity rising through our ranks. From here, Farley's half of our forces can easily get up to Whitefire, Caesar's Square, and the cliffs that make up West Archeon. The rest, following Premier Davidson and General Swan, will cross under the river and link up with General Pallas, the last member of command still operating in the city. If all goes to plan, we'll be able to overrun both sides of Archeon before anyone knows we're here, and the Lakelanders will be caught in the middle. But will Cal fight with us? He has to, I tell myself. He has no other choice. The official objective is to keep the city out of Lakelander hands. We can do that, at the very least. We can do that. Next to me, Killorn brushes my arm, sensing my discomfort. The burst of warmth makes me shiver again. At the edge of my perception, something tinges. It hums and buzzes, the whine of distant electricity, not above us, strangely, but ahead and steadily approaching. "Something's coming," I bark aloud. Titan reacts in the same manner, his body tensing. "Stand back," he shouts, pushing Maven against the wall. The rest of us follow suit, moving quickly as the sound reaches us. An engine screeches far ahead, closing the distance as it gains speed over the tracks. The lights round a gentle curve, blinding in comparison to our lanterns, and I have to turn my head to shield my eyes. I end up looking at Maven, who doesn't flinch. He doesn't even blink. The familiar train speeds by in a blur of gray metal, too fast for us to glimpse who may be inside. Still, Maven searches the windows as they fly by, his blue eyes big as dinner plates. He pales, going whiter than Titan's hair, and his throat works furiously, lips pressing into a disappearing line. All this passes in an instant as he quickly wrestles his emotions under control, but the moment is enough for me. I know what fear looks like in Maven Kalor, and he is terrified now, for very good reason. Whatever plan he had, whatever hope there was for escape, just disappeared with that train. He catches me staring, reading the fading expression on his face. His jaw tightens just a little, and his eyes run over me, slow as a caress. "You can't run from what you've done," I want to say aloud. He gets the message. As the train fades to nothing again, beyond my perception, his eyes flutter shut. I think he's saying goodbye. Like the lights of the train, the spiraling white of the treasury vaults is blinding. Titan has Maven by the neck. He uses the leverage to increase our pace, forcing Maven to march faster and faster as we ascend the vault levels. The air fills with the sound of weapons and body armor being checked, guns loaded, blades drawn, buttons fastened, buckles clicked into place. The pistol on my own hip is still an unusual weight, and I lean a little to compensate. I doubt I'll fire a bullet up there, not like Farley. She sheds her jacket, tossing it to the side to be trampled by the hundreds behind us. Without the red overcoat, I can see the many belts and holsters crossing her back and hips, slung with half a dozen different guns and corresponding ammunition, as well as her radio. She has her knives as well, now in plain sight. Diana Farley is ready for war. Somewhere behind us, one of the Scarlet Guard shouts, her voice echoing oddly. I can't decipher it, but others repeat her words. The cheer reverberates off the walls, the sound rising like thunder, until I realize what they're chanting. Rise, red as the dawn. In spite of my fear, I feel a wicked, wild grin rise to my lips. Rise, red as the dawn. The spiraling passage choruses with the battle cry. We're almost running, Maven struggling to keep up with Titan's pace. Farley matches his speed, her long strides eating up the white marble beneath our feet. Rise, red as the dawn! Killorn's voice joins the din. Rise, red as the dawn! The lights overhead flicker in time with my heartbeat. I look back, searching through the ranks of red and green, Scarlet Guard and Montfort. The range of faces, skin every shade, blood both colors, all speaking in shuddering unison. Some raise their fists, or weapons, or both, but no one is silent. Our voices are so loud, I can barely hear my own. Rise, red as the dawn! I call to lightning, call to thunder, call to all the strength left in my body. I'm not a general or commander. The only things I have to worry about topside are myself, Killorn, and Farley, if she'll let me. That's all I have the capacity for. And Cal, wherever he might be, leading his army, fighting in vain against a greater force, defending a city from almost inevitable ruin. Titan is first through the great doors of the treasury, vaulting out into the spiraling rain with Maven in tow. The younger prince skids, his shoes sliding over the wet tiles of Caesar's Square, but Titan keeps his grip. I follow, half expecting Titan to kill Maven on the spot, already shivering in the rain. We never planned on letting Maven survive the battle, and we don't need him anymore. Not really. It could be over right now. I feel tugged by both ends of the decision, as if it's really my decision to make. The other electrocon never loosens his grasp, almost holding Maven down. Titan isn't as temperamental as the rest of us. He is slow to fury, even now, with Maven in hand. He's a good jailer for someone the rest of us despise so much. Do it. I hear Maven grit out, head still bowed. He extends his white hands, and I watch his fingers tremble in the rain. Like me, he knows where this road leads. Behind us, more and more of Farley's forces flood into the square, still cheering the words of the Scarlet Guard. They fill the space with color, uniforms of red and green, standing out starkly, even in the wet fog. I focus on the fallen king, now shuddering 100 yards from his own palace. Even the rhythmic thud of gunfire and explosions barely penetrates my awareness. I said, Do it! Maven snarls again, trying to goad Titan. Or me. Above us, the storm clouds churn. I feel the flash of lightning before it crackles across the sky, purple and white, an emblem of our presence. Let Cal know we're here. You don't have any more use for me. Rainwater drips down his face, tracing familiar paths. Be done with it. Slowly, he raises his eyes to mine. I expect sorrow or defeat, not icy anger. Ty, I start, but the word is hardly out of my mouth when a shell strikes true, exploding over the columned walls of the treasury. The force of it blows us sideways, falling over already slippery ground. My skull cracks against the tile, and I see dizzy stars for a second. I try to stand and fall again, colliding with an equally disoriented Titan. He holds me down, pushing me flat against the square as a leaping tongue of flame passes over us, singeing the air directly above our heads. Maven! I scream, my voice lost in the surge of battle. Against the guns, the missiles, the mortar shells, the wind and the rain, I might as well whisper. Beneath me, Titan tenses, pushing up on his elbows. His head whips back and forth, searching the crowd around us for a gray form and black hair. I roll to my knees, cursing, the twists of my hair already coming undone. Purple strands drift, unfamiliar. Killoran skids to a stop at my shoulder, his face already sweaty and flush with exertion. Is he gone? He pants, trying to help me up. As my head clears, I manage to get my feet underneath me. My muscles tighten, ready to dodge another flaming blow. Not that I need to. That isn't his way. Maven isn't a warrior. He's gone. I hear myself hiss. I can choose to hunt him down, or I can make sure we finish what we've started. I can keep my friends alive. With a burst of determination, I force myself to turn, face the gates of the square and the bridge beyond. We have work to do. Though it's still shrouded in fog, I can just make out hundreds of soldiers spanning the bridge, with the looming hulks of Lakelander ships below. In the sky, air jets give chase, with wings of yellow, purple, red, blue, and green, swooping like deadly birds of prey. I can't make out anything beyond the river. The other half of the city is entirely obscured. At least Farley and the officers have their radios. They should be able to communicate with Davidson on the far side. Extending a hand, I take Titan by the wrist, hoisting him to his feet. His face darkens as he scowls, disgusted with himself. I'm sorry. I think I hear him whisper. I should have killed him when I had the chance. Spinning on my heel, I make for Farley. Join the club, I mutter, sending another angry bolt across the sky. In the fog, flashes of blue and green pulse, as if in reply. They made it across, Killoran muses, pointing out the distant lights. Rafe and Ella, Davidson's army. In spite of Maven's escape, my lips twitch, wanting to smile. A small burst of triumph blooms in my chest. Well, that's something. More than something. Caesar's Square contains the center of Norton government, the palace, the courts, the treasury, and war command. But the bulk of the capital is on the other side of the river. Our side might be more valuable, but East Archeon is larger, with a greater population, red and silver. They won't be left to fend for themselves against the Lakelander assault while Cal's army concentrates on the Armada. Farley stares down the gullet of the bridge, standing tall and stoic, a statue against the soldiers moving around her. Her lieutenants bark orders, organizing their troops into predetermined formation. Half form a shield wall of bodies facing Whitefire in war command, where some of Cal's own silvers could still be. The others face out, looking down the cliffs to the river or blocking this end of the bridge. Essentially, trapping Cal between this side of the water and the other, suspended over the Armada below. We reach her without delay, the Scarlet Guard and Montfort soldiers parting to let us pass. Titan is quick to get to work, hurling his blinding white darts of electricity at the ships below. The steel leviathans seem impenetrable, even for magnetrons. Blue rumbles in the clouds, before one of Ella's storm bolts hits the prow of a battleship with the keening scream of tearing metal. I squint over the walls of the cliff edge, searching the river. It should be hundreds of feet below, but it seems closer than I remember. My mouth goes dry, when I realize the Lakelanders must have raised the river to allow their largest ships to sail this far. "It's still rising," Farley says over her shoulder, making room for me on her perch. "We won't be able to escape the way we came." I bite my lip, thinking of the tunnels beneath us. "Flooded?" She nods. "More than likely." Her eyes waver, looking between the river and the silhouettes on the bridge. Smoke spirals with the fog, black against the white and gray. "We made it through, just in time." Killorn settles in next to us. His attention is on the bridge, not the water. From this vantage point, I can see that Cal's forces aren't defending the bridge, but striking from it. Through the fog, swifts blur along the decks of the boats below, alongside strong arms, Annabelle's oblivions, and other silvers best suited to close combat. Shivers of House Glyakon seem to be making the most headway. They use their abilities to freeze. One of the smaller battleships is completely iced in, frozen against the supports of the bridge. I sigh in relief when I don't see fire dancing among the ships. Nothing but the usual explosive blasts. Cal isn't down there fighting with the armada himself. Yet. "Do you think he knows we're here?" Killorn wonders, still looking at the bridge. Farley clenches her jaw. She rests her hand at her side, not on her gun, but on the radio strapped high on her hip. "Cal seems a bit preoccupied." "He knows," I mutter, another peal of purple lightning streaking across the sky. The air is thick, like the clouds have come down to obscure the battle raging before us. I flinch as another round strikes the square, missiles crashing through a wing of the palace. "I don't see Maven," Farley says, shifting closer to me. I find myself facing the full weight of her cerulean stare, clear and bright even in the haze. "Is it done?" I bite my lip, almost drawing blood. The sharp pain is better than shame. She reads my hesitation, and her face purples quicker than I thought possible. "Mare Barrow!" The crackle of the radio at her side cuts her off, saving me from her rage. She rips it free, snarling into the receiver. "This is General Farley." The voice on the other end does not belong to a command general or a Montfort officer. It isn't Davidson either. I would know that voice anywhere, even punctuated by gunfire. "I thought you weren't coming back," Cal says, sounding tinny and far away, distorted by static. The electricity in the air must not be very good for radio waves. Breathless, I look from Farley toward the bridge. Sure enough, one of the shadows in the fog seems to be solidifying. Broad shoulders and a familiar determined stride move closer and closer. I keep still, my feet rooted in place on our perch above the fray. Farley smirks down at her radio. "So nice of you to make time for us." "It's only polite," he replies. With a sigh, Farley angles herself toward the form on the bridge, now less than 50 yards away. Cal is surrounded by his guards, and he halts, stopping the group. The silvers seem tense, their guns ready, waiting for an order. He acknowledges us with a tip of his head. Farley furrows her brow a little, hesitant. "I'm guessing you know where things stand, Cal," she says. His response is almost too quick. "I do." Farley bites her lip. "And?" A long rush of static drones before he speaks again. "Mayor?" The radio is in my hand before I can even think to ask for it. "I'm here," I say, locking eyes with him across a canyon. "Is it too late?" The question has too many implications to count. Purple, white, green, and blue flash through the clouds, enough to penetrate the mist and blind us all for a moment. Shutting my eyes, I smile with the burst of energy as it thrums through me. When the lightning passes, I answer him and everything he means. "No, it isn't," I tell him, before returning the radio to Farley. She doesn't stop me as I clamber down the steps, and Cal's guards stand aside when I approach, walking through the broken gates of the ruinous square. He waits at the edge of the Archeon Bridge, unmoving. As before, he lets me come to him. He lets me set the pace, choose the direction, make the decision. He puts it all in my hands. I keep an even step, in spite of the rumblings far below. Something smashes, wailing and roaring. One of the ships, maybe, colliding into another. I hardly notice. The embrace is short, far too short, but enough. I steady myself against him, holding tightly for as long as I dare, feeling the warm, hard lines of his body pressed against me. He smells like smoke and blood and sweat. His arms cross my back, holding me around the shoulders to pull me into his chest. "I'm done with crowns," he murmurs to the top of my head. "Finally," I whisper. We push back in unison, turning to the situation at hand. We don't have time for anything else, and I certainly don't have the capacity to think about much more. He raises the radio again, one hand still resting on my shoulder. "General, I believe Volo Samos and some of his own soldiers are still in war command," he says. Through the mist, I glance at the hulking building on the edge of the square. "You want to keep an eye on your backs." "Got it, will do," she answers. "Anything else?" She's on the move, barking orders to her lieutenants as she relays the advice. Killorn and Titan flank her like guards. "We're working on blocking up the river. If the ships can't turn around, they can't escape." I finish for him, glancing out at the destruction on both sides of the city. Missiles spiral overhead, trailing smoke like black ink over paper as they arc and explode. In spite of Cal's soldiers, as well as the jets overhead, the Lakelander Armada doesn't seem to be taking much damage. As I watch, another one of Ella's stormbolts cracks, but a wave rises with blinding speed, taking the brunt of the blow to save a battleship. It lights up with the eerie glow of electricity before fading and falling harmlessly back into the river. It must be Queen Senra's doing, maybe with her daughter's help. I've never seen such a display of power, even from people who delight in that sort of thing. Cal watches with me, his face still and grim. "We have to start sinking the ships, but with the river, they have all the shields they'll ever need. Right now, it's all we can do to minimize the damage to the city." He curses as a wave knocks back another volley of gunfire. "They have to run out of ammunition eventually, right?" he says dryly. I glare at the offending ships, eyes running over their steel hides. "Call up some teleporters. Let's get Larilan Oblivions and Evangeline onto a ship. Have them tear some holes. Evangeline is gone." "But you said her father..." Somehow Cal looks oddly proud. "She had an opportunity, and she took it." An opportunity to run and put all this behind her. I don't need much of an imagination to guess where she might be running, or who she's running with. Like Cal, I feel a strange mix of pride and surprise. "The train," I say, almost smirking to myself. "Well done," I can't help but think. He quirks an eyebrow. "What?" "In the tunnels, we saw Maven's escape train on the move. It must have been her," I answer. It stings to say his name, and I grimace. A sour taste fills my mouth. "He's here, by the way," I blurt out. The temperature around us rises a few degrees. Cal's lips drop open in shock. "Maven?" I nod. Heat flares up in my cheeks. "He led us back into the city, to spite you." Still sputtering, Cal runs a hand over his face. "Well, too bad I can't thank him," he finally mumbles, attempting a smirk. I don't laugh, unable to do much more than bite my lip. "What's that look for?" It's no use lying. "He slipped us." He blinks at me. Another missile whines past. "This is a very odd time for a very odd joke, Mayor." I waver, dropping my gaze. "I'm not joking." The flamemaker bracelet on his wrist sparks, and he turns the spark to a ball of flame. Angry, surprised, exasperated, he tosses the fiery orb over the edge of the bridge, letting it singe the fog as it fades. "So he's somewhere in the city," he snaps. "Fantastic. You keep an eye on Killorn and Farley. I'll find him," I say quickly, putting a hand to his arm. The plates of steel beneath my touch feel like they've been sitting in an oven. Cal brushes me away gently. He glances back toward the square again, teeth gritted.
No, I will.
I've always been faster than he is. I dodge his hands with ease, planting myself firmly between him and the square. Putting my palm on his chest, I hold him at arm's length. You're a little busy, I say, jerking my chin toward the armada below us.
A little, he grinds out.
I can finish this.
I know you can.
His armor warms beneath my hand, and he covers my fingers with his own. Then the bridge buckles beneath us as something slams into it, a dozen times from all angles, above, below, missiles, shells. A crashing wave sends spray up the supports and onto the level where we stand. Heavier in his armor, Cal loses his balance, falling flat while I fight to stay upright. Except there is no such thing as upright. The three-tiered bridge of Archeon, massive stone and steel, bows toward its center, drooping downward. It isn't difficult to guess why. Another explosion shudders, and a spray of debris plummets outward, falling with the central supports of the bridge. Cal scrambles, trying to get his feet, and I seize him beneath the arm. I would drag him if I could, but the armor is too heavy. Help! I shout, looking for his guards. The Lariland soldiers, his grandmother's own kin, waste no time dragging Cal to his feet. But the bridge fights us, falling faster and faster, roaring against its own demise. I scream when the pavement under our feet gives way, slamming into the next tier 30 feet below. I land hard on my side and something cracks in my ribs, sending spiderwebs of pain over me. Hissing, I try to roll and get my bearings. Get off the bridge, get off the bridge. Drums in my head. Cal is already on his knees, a hand outstretched, not to grab me, to stop me.
Don't move,
he screams. Fingers splayed. I freeze mid-step, my arm wrapped around my ribcage. His eyes stand out sharply, so afraid, his pupils blown wide and dark. Instead of the armada, their guns raining concussive hell upon us, I can only hear one thing. Like a whisper, but worse. Cracking. Crumbling. Cal! Everything collapses beneath us.
34. Cal. I fall like a stone. The useless, patronizing armor that never did anything but slow me down won't protect me from a 100-foot drop into raging water. It can't save me, and I can't save her. My hands claw through open air, reaching for anything to grab, but the fog just whistles through my fingers. I can't even shout. Debris tumbles with us, and I brace for the impact of solid concrete. Maybe it'll crush me before I get the chance to drown. What a small mercy that would be. I try to see her, even as the river rises up to meet me. Someone grabs me around my middle, arms squeezing so tightly the breath is crushed from my lungs. My vision spots. I might be passing out. Or not. I howl as the river and the fog and the crumbling bridge disappear, swallowed up by a blackness. My entire body tightens, tensing up, and when I hit something solid, I expect all my bones to shatter into dust. But nothing breaks. I didn't know kings could scream like that. My eyes fly open to see Killorn Warren standing over me, his face pale behind a friendly smile. He offers a hand, and I take it gladly, letting him pull me up. The Montfort teleporter looks on, panting slightly in her green uniform. She's small, almost as small as Mare, and gives me a curt nod.
Thanks, I gasp, still trying to wrap my brain around surviving.
She shrugs.
Just following orders, sir.
Will we ever get used to that?
Mare says from a few feet away, still on her knees. She spits a little, looking green in the face. Her teleporter, the Montfort officer Arezzo, looks down at her with a smirk.
Would you prefer the alternative?
Mare just rolls her eyes. She glances at me and sticks out her hand, gesturing for help. Killorn takes one side, with me on the other, and we pull her to her feet. She pats dirt from her own uniform, the blood-red color of the Scarlet Guard, if only to do something for a moment. She's just as unsettled as I am, though she's loath to show it. I suppose you never get used to being plucked from the jaws of death, no matter how many times it happens.
How many fell?
She asks, still not looking up. I bite my lip and glance around, spotting a few Lirilin guards recovering alongside us. But teleporters can only do so much, and I had hundreds of soldiers on the bridge, with even more below. My stomach churns with the implication. Gritting my teeth, I get my bearings and realize we're back at the edge of the square, embedded within Farley's troops now rapidly fortifying the cliff. Beyond, a skeleton of the Archeon Bridge remains, collapsed in the middle, with the river boiling below. One of the Lakelander ships is pinned, sinking beneath the weight of a bridge support that fell like a tree in a storm, crashing down on the steel hull. Too heavy, even for the Lakelander queens. Through the fog, I can't see the far end of the bridge, but I can only hope the bulk of my forces made it to one of the surviving edges. We didn't have much of an army to begin with, but every life lost is another weight on my shoulders. I feel as if the burden might crush me already, and this battle is far from over. Mare shifts to stand at my side, looking out as I do. Her fingers lace with mine for a second before she reluctantly pulls away.
I need to find him,
she whispers. As much as I want to help her in such an endeavor, I simply can't. Not unless I want to leave Nanabel in command, or, by my colors, Julian. Neither is equipped to defend Archeon properly, especially in conjunction with Diana Farley. Go, I tell Mare, putting my hand on the small of her back. With a heavy sigh, I give her the slightest push. Toward my brother. To kill him. Be rid of him. I should be the one to do it. I should have the spine for that. But I can't bear it. I can't bear the weight of killing him. Not maybe. As she goes, Killorn tagging along with her, I shut my eyes and draw in a long, rattling breath. How many times do I have to say goodbye to him? How many times have I lost him? The river! Someone barks. I snap to attention, letting instinct take hold. I trained for years to be a warrior and a general, to see battle inches in front of me and from miles away. Immediately, I try to picture the city in my head, split down the middle by the Capital River, now choked with the Lakelander Armada. We're cut off from the other side of Archeon, isolated here, with only teleporters for transport. How many, I don't know. But it certainly isn't enough if the Lakelanders decide to turn their attention on the cliffs and the people there. Farley still holds her perch, a long gun slung over one shoulder. She presses her eyes to a pair of binoculars, looking downward, unmoving. Like a statue, silhouetted by mist and smoke. Is it still rising? I ask, stepping up next to her for a better look. She passes me the binoculars without breaking her stare.
And rising faster. Look downriver,
she adds, jerking her thumb to the south. It isn't hard to spot what she means. Whitecaps approach, waves breaking in choppy motion as the Lakelanders pull in more and more water from the ocean. The river surges forward at a steady pace, solidifying into a wall of water like a single unbroken ripple 20 feet high. I'd bet the river here has risen at least 30 feet so far, and it's about to rise a lot more. In spite of the Scarlet Guard fortifications, the cliffs take a beating, pieces of rock shearing away as another volley of missiles hits home. I duck, raising an arm to block the debris as it sprays over us. Farley simply turns her head. Julian's running the infirmary at the barracks with Sarah Skonos. Better get some runners ready, I instruct, watching as a few soldiers turn away from the cliffs, their faces bloody.
And Annabelle?
She replies. Her tone is forcibly neutral.